William, hopefully your favorite videographer from Two Hats Publishing. I welcome you to another Two Hats special of community events. Let's look in and see what's really happening.
Good afternoon and welcome to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Josh. Is this starting to piss you off too? Patty Fink has not been late for a show since she got married.
It's true.
And Laurent Landis took the day off. What did he say he was doing today?
Has a friend in Fort Worth.
Okay.
In D.C.
Okay, so that's where Laurent is. Our guest today is former District 14 City Council chick, Philette Allel.
I think it's actually former old hen.
And former first executive director of the Dallas Arts District.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, she built the Windspear, the Wiley, the
all by herself.
I mean, just like Noah built the Ark all by himself, a modern day
And not only
builder.
Did she build that stuff, but if you ride Dart Rail, you stop at Pearl/Arts District.
That's right.
It should be the Pearl/ Valletta Station.
Valletta Station, that's mm-hmm. it.
It should be the Valletta
that's
Station.
Right.
Valletta's also been involved for years with preservation issues. She's working hard to bring a highway to the Trinity River. She's trying to bring a Gap and a Walmart to Bishop Arts District. And, no? No.
Thankfully, she knows you, David.
And rumors are, Mike Rawlings is in his second term of office. He has a little over 2 years to go, like 2 years and 11 months. That's a little over two. And that she'll be running for mayor. Is that true?
Not at all. Dispel the rumor immediately.
You know?
My husband could be listening at this point.
We got somebody else who represented that district to announce that she was running for governor. Didn't we? Can't even get you to run for mayor. Okay, so this week, this is what we're talking about today.
Okay.
This week was a horrible week.
It was.
In Dallas. More police officers killed than any time since September 11th.
This one
was directed at police officers. September 11th wasn't particularly directed at police officers, but more died. Five officers died, seven injured, two civilians were injured also. I know one of the police officers who was injured, one of the DART officers, he's home. He went home with his husband and went home on Friday, and he's doing fine. The others, apparently, from reports I've gotten, are doing okay.
That's good news.
Of the officers, the DPD officers, are still in either Parkland or Baylor. The others have been released, too. So several of the Parkland officers released. One of the civilians was released, and we don't know about the other one. They haven't released a name.
They have not released a name.
And somebody who wants his or her privacy, that's fine, too. The demonstration was a reaction to two police shootings earlier in the week, one in Baton Rouge, which seemed like a bad one, but then one up in Minneapolis that seemed like nothing short of an execution. They're investigating. The officer up there hasn't been arrested yet, and I'm saying yet because I don't know what they can find that would that would make what he did in any way look okay. I mean, Patty, you were saying.
I think we should back up though. There were two killings by police officers of black men, young black men, in both cities,
mm-hmm.
And I think there are questions raised on both that, you know, video and eyewitness accounts say, you know, maybe it didn't happen as legitimately as most people would assume police officers act.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, you can look at some of the video footage and photographs, still photographs taken in Baton Rouge, and this guy's hands were nowhere near his pockets mm-hmm. when they shot him point blank in the chest. You know, and the same in Minneapolis. He was a lawful, fully permitted, concealed handgun citizen mm-hmm. exercising his Second Amendment rights. And he told the officer, I have a weapon, let me take it out. And when he proceeded to do so, shot four times in the chest with a four-year-old
in
the car.
In
the back seat.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I think this raises a lot of questions, and it's just pile on. There have been so many, you know, and many types of people are killed by police officers in this country, no question. But I think the Black Lives Movement is crying out for a statement of their humanity that we as white people perhaps do not mm-hmm. adequately stand with. You know, we need to stand with them in this, because it's pretty egregious. And when you look at through all the cases, so many cases, no convictions, no mm-hmm. convictions whatsoever.
And I think social media and the ever presence of video has changed a lot of this. Prior to, you know, iPhones and so forth, it was us against them or an officer and whoever might have been there, or maybe nobody was there other than an officer. Then you move to some video and social media, and then finally, in the case, for example, in Baton Rouge, you had multiple video
mm-hmm.
from multiple angles, because even cameras sometimes, given the angle, can be difficult. But in this case, you had multiple angles that the video was taken from. And then in the case of Minnesota, very, very close up.
Yes.
So all of the audio is there.
So the audio was there. So that has sort of changed the way everybody perceives these interactions.
And I think that's a good thing about that, though.
Right.
I know in the 60s when Americans watched live on television what happened at Selma.
Exactly.
It changed the country. It really changed the country for them to see it firsthand, that this is what's taking place. You can hear about it all day long and read about it in the newspaper or hear it on the news, but it doesn't really mean the same until you see it with your own eyes.
It's that visual. It was the visual of beatings.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And fire hose and dogs.
And fire hose and dogs. And then you move to the Vietnam War, where it was video of small children running down the street, etc. So it's the visualization of violence.
Mm-hmm. And with the social media.
And the personalization. And with social media, it is not only the professionals taking this video, it's the amateur, it's the personal, it's the very, very close up.
Mm-hmm. And we all get to see it. We get to see what happens in these stories. I mean, we could hear about them, you know, like even earlier in the 90s, of police brutality against black people in this country. But I think
there was that famous case in the last 30 years that have really brought it to the fore. That famous case in Los Angeles. Rodney King,
mm-hmm.
That first brought the idea of police brutality against black people to the fore, but that one was fought, and some people were still siding with the police, and some people were siding with King, and basically it divided on racial lines.
Then they went and had a trial in very white Simi Valley and got acquitted,
mm-hmm.
all four of them.
Right. So, but now we have cell phone video. which that just makes a huge amount of difference.
We saw that happen the other night, in fact, in downtown when the gentleman who was walking with his long gun lawfully in the state of Texas, albeit, you know, kind of out there, it was unloaded. He was in the part of the protest. He was named as a suspect and then as a person of interest. But then they had cell phone video of him handing over his rifle to a police officer and receiving a business card.
And what happened
like,
there?
Wow, we have video of that. So now maybe everybody can believe he wasn't involved
handed
it over.
And we know he wasn't involved. I mean, let's start with that. We know he wasn't involved. But when there are shootings involved, people who are going to open carry need to take responsibility that they might just be looked at as a suspect or a person of interest until they can be cleared. I understand it's state law. I understand the rest of the state loves this law. I understand that the first day of open carry here in Dallas, they staffed up 911 because they were expecting a ton of calls from everybody walking into a Kroger to anything else that was allowing guns. You know how many calls they got about open carry in the city of Dallas? It's a big city. None. Not one single one. I was looking. I was ready to call 911 and say there is an idiot here walking around the Kroger on my corner with a gun. I dropped my my basket and ran out of the store to call you. They didn't get one. And you know why? Because people aren't walking around Dallas with open carry guns. They're just not. We don't like that law here. But it's his. He did nothing wrong. He turned the gun over to one officer, but other people had taken pictures of him, demonstrators, police, and actually it came from demonstrators, I believe. They had pictures of him with a gun. There's a shooting of 12 police officers. That's the only person we saw with a gun. So all of a sudden he became a suspect. That was de-escalated to a person of interest pretty quickly. Then he was brought into police headquarters and released. You know, I'm sorry it was so inconvenient for him.
Well, I hope it's a lesson forward. I personally oppose open carry. Mm-hmm. I think it's insane that the state legislature said we could have open carry in the places they've named, like you know, mental facilities, mental hospital facilities.
Right, what could go wrong?
College campuses.
That one's on hold.
And then they're talking about doing it in bars. I'm like, are you serious?
Yeah, people drinking. What could go wrong?
Yeah, what could go wrong? You know, it's. But that's a whole different culture from what happened here.
The letter, the demonstration, which was peaceful, was put together by Black Lives Matter, or an affiliate of it, or what was the demonstration about? Because they weren't protesting Dallas police.
Social justice movement, and the spark for that particular demonstration was the loss of life in Minnesota and Baton Rouge. So that, although the movement is about the cumulative effect of brutality and loss of life, this was really a catalyst from both Louisiana and Minnesota. But we just need to make certain that we continue to reinforce.
So going into this demonstration,
to reinforce that it was a peaceful movement.
Oh yeah, yeah.
The police were there. They were working together side by side. They had met with some of the planners in advance. So this was not about DPD.
No. Most emphatically not. And DPD has done, Lord knows, the LGBT community has had a lot of protests, and we go to the police first.
Right.
And we find out what we need to do. They're going to explain how it's going to work in terms of security. And then we proceed and we have our peaceful protests. We have a long history of that in this
exactly.
city. Not just the LGBT community, but everybody. Heck, we had a mega march here. You know, with 500,000 people in it. Mm-hmm. It went fine. You know?
And it went out off without incident, largely because they're very experienced Dallas Police Department is in sort of planning this. You know, I've spent more than a few St. Patrick's days on top of Stan's Blue Note watching people gathering. And whenever you have people gather, whether it's a demonstration or simply a big festival, things can happen. And so they know how to de-escalate, whether it's about violence or, frankly, even not about violence, but simply people push together in a small space. So they know how to de-escalate that and quickly move away from it.
I'm so glad they have that experience and that training.
Oh, sure. Yeah. And we'll talk about de-escalation in a minute, but I want to go back to the actual message of this march. What do you think was the message that they wanted to be broadcast? If I'm the reporter, we're the reporters here, and if we're bringing them in, tell us what you want us to get from this march, just real clearly. No, go. I just want to make this real clear, because the stupidity that I've heard on the other side.
This is about injustice. Right. It's about justice and injustice.
Okay.
It's about recognizing the very real humanity of Black Americans.
Okay, so
which I think I tend to agree. There are so many white Americans who do not see it, recognize it, appreciate it, value it. You know, would you agree with that?
And there's some discussion that, by the term Black Lives Matters, that in some way they are saying everybody else doesn't. That's
not what they're saying.
That's not
exactly
at all what it's saying. Right. What it's saying is Black Lives Matter. There's an implicit too.
Mm-hmm.
They matter too, like everyone else.
They're saying that the lives that are least valued by police forces around the country, apparently based on statistics, pay attention here to those. Okay, so here's why I'm asking that, because Patty's looking at me, why are you asking this question? Our lieutenant governor, not known for being much of a brain trust, our lieutenant...
Or even an open, narrow mind. But, you know...
He doesn't have a narrow mind.
He can have a tiny brain, that's fine. Yeah. You know, a lot of people have tiny brains.
Okay, so...
It's not even open.
This was Obama's fault. The demonstrators showed their hypocrisy by running when the shots were fired. No, that's what they're protesting, that shots are being fired at them.
And they were following police commands.
Right.
Seek cover, seek shelter now.
And they did, because the police did a wonderful job of protecting the public.
And to get down, they were told they needed to get down. I mean, Robert Moore is a perfect example of that.
He's trapped behind a car.
He was told to get down. Then he took his command from the police officer once the police officer felt it was clear how to move. Their command.
He was with those officers for 2 hours.
Right.
For 2 hours, huddled behind a car. He said he was so scared. But here's this officer who has other things to do who was protecting him.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So... I don't even understand why.
So the other thing our lieutenant governor was saying was that the Black Lives Matter organization is to blame for these deaths. I don't know. I kind of blame that officer who executed somebody at a traffic stop.
Well, actually, I blame the shooter who took his weapon into a parking garage and from a high angle began picking off police officers. That's who is responsible for this. I mean,
yes, 100%. Who had nothing to do with the Black Lives Matter organization, because if Black Lives mattered to him, he wouldn't have done this at a demonstration that was organized by the Black community. And by the way, it was not just Black people who were there. There were a ton of all kinds of people there at the Dallas demonstration. I don't know about in other cities, but at the Dallas demonstration, a ton of people from across the community were there. Why? because they're people who believe that black lives do matter. We need to take a break. We're talking to Valletta Lill. We're talking about the shootings that took place Thursday night. Absolutely a horrible week for us here in Dallas, and we'll discuss it a little bit more right after this.
Hi, this is Valletta Lill.
It's on, yeah. This is Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink. Our guest is Valletta Lill. She's a former city council person, and has always been active in the community here. So, you were already scheduled, and this was perfect that you were going to be here with us today. So I'm thrilled that you're here.
I'm curious about your thoughts, having sat on, done eight years on the council and know the city, how the city operates, pretty intimately. What are your thoughts about the response? Because I thought that the mayor's response on the...
I've been so proud of the mayor and Chief Brown and all the representatives of the city who have spoken.
And Clay Jenkins, I've seen him nationally on national news programs. He was wonderful.
They've come off not only knowledgeable, but very human. People could... Very relatable.
Mm-hmm.
That nothing sounded canned. Everything was very personal. They were informing the community what was happening. And we know they were up with little sleep for literally days. I just saw the mayor this morning on a Sunday morning program. The police chief has been interviewed by everybody. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine.
Yeah.
And he has, and then beyond them, how impressed with the faith community I have mm-hmm. been to come together. What great representation from those folks and Chief Brown and the mayor downtown at Thanksgiving Square. It really presents a model to the rest of the country to say, Dallas really has it together in that way.
And we're not like some of the other cities in this state who portray themselves or allow themselves to be portrayed, less together.
Mm-hmm.
I think we are really together here in this city.
We're not perfect. I don't mean to imply that. But I've also been very proud of the fact of many of the programs that Dallas has put in place are, we responded early to many of these issues. Mm-hmm. The de-escalation is early. But we were doing chase policy mm-hmm. many years ago
mm-hmm.
was a reaction to a death of someone that was being chased, and it was an innocent bystander. Many of those policy, LGBT community.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How long have we worked with DPD? I mean, decades at this point.
Yeah, and we look at how things were even just within our own community in the 70s and 80s and how they are today. I think, when I'm asked this, because we do so many of these classes out at the academy, how has it changed? I'm thinking, it used to be, and there's still some people that are fearful of police. I think they're just fearful of police, period. But we used to all be fearful of police, and now I think most of us look up and see an officer and see someone who can help. Someone who is somebody we want to wave at and say hi as we walk by.
Because we know
fear.
Them.
Exactly.
Because we know them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Talk a minute about the de-escalation policy. It started under Chief Click with his community policing.
Community policing
that
starts under Chief Click, and my goodness.
93-ish.
Yeah, 93.
Yeah.
That's probably 93, 94, around that time. Chief Kunkel, the use of force, the pursuit policies, many of those came under Chief Kunkel. And then finally, Chief Brown, to do the de-escalation. And it has been continuously reported during these last 48 hours that indeed Dallas was the head of the curve in many of these policies that have been discussed at the White House
mm-hmm.
de-escalation policies. What should you do in these cases? And you see, the visual of that would have been the picture of the police officer with the protester down at Belo Garden. Mm-hmm. The three of them talking and the three of them snapping a selfie or a picture together. That's just a tiny bit of that, but that's a tiny piece of, that look, you see humanity from both sides.
Yes.
Here are some statistics about that. Dallas has the lowest rate of police shootings of any major city in the U.S., period. Excessive force complaints by citizens against the police department. 2009, there were 147 complaints. 2014, there were 50 complaints. So, in other words, it went from 3 complaints a week to 1 complaint a week. Is 1 complaint a week good? Well, it's so much better than 3 a week. And let's see if we can get that down more. And just because somebody filed an excessive force complaint doesn't mean that it was a justified complaint. So some of these 53 were justified force. And I don't know what percentage were actually upheld, which ones the officer was reprimanded or what.
And Dallas has long had a police review board so that people can...
Including civilians.
Right. Can complain to someplace else because everybody has the ability to create their complaint, both to the police department, but also go through that police
review. Now, when we say de-escalation, I know one of the things that we're talking about is we want citizens and police to know that we're on the same team. So one of the things that Dallas police officers did during this demonstration, and remember, the shootings didn't start till the very end of the demonstration
when they got to the...
It was breaking up at that point. And so they're marching, and the police officers, and there were about 100 that were assigned to this, the police officers were walking along with them, talking with them, taking selfies with them, laughing with them, listening to them when they had any complaints. They were just doing all of that. That's one of the de-escalation techniques. Do you know what some of the others are?
It's talking in a calm voice.
Mm-hmm.
It's those things of community policing, so you do know those. They're reticent. Tasers, don't be tasing folks. It's the use.
It's shoot to wound, not to kill.
Right.
If you are forced to do force, you know, those sorts of things.
It's all those kinds of things that take, we've all been in an argument where the voices get...
Yeah, Patty and I every week.
Well, almost every week.
So it's bringing down the tone of the experience that allows everybody to, okay, take a breath, you know.
And I saw on television the other night a thing about Camden, New Jersey. The city of Camden eliminated all of their police force. There were so many issues with it, rehired, and have gone with a pure community policing de-escalation approach. They have eliminated tons of desk jobs, so those officers are out on the streets and forming relationships in neighborhoods. And they mix it up. They put white officers in black neighborhoods. They put Hispanic officers in white neighborhoods. They put, you know, so that everybody is together, and they know other people, they know their police officers, and the police officers know them. And so that when something happens in a neighborhood, they know who they're calling, who's going to arrive, because they've worked with them so closely. And they used to be one of the highest murder rates in the country in Camden, New Jersey, and most fearful for people to visit, and tourism was down. And now it's almost, you know, a very, very small rate. So I think it is a good approach that I think if we took nationwide could ameliorate a lot of these problems.
And what you saw when you were looking at the police department and when this started going down, you're looking at downtown and you don't see them in riot gear.
Right.
At this point. Now, you've certainly seen the SWAT trucks and so forth show up later, but you were not in the moments of the protest seeing them in riot gear, helmets, with Flutter militarized.
So, like, right
so
after...
not creating a militarization.
As we saw in Atlanta, apparently.
Mm-hmm. You saw it in Atlanta.
The Black Lives Movement protest just a few nights ago in Atlanta saw basically armored vehicles by the dozens, you know, showing up at the protest. I mean, like, what does that message send?
So the time that we were protesting Judge Hampton in front of the Crowley Courts building, and this is back in 1988? Something like that.
Yeah, that's
when the sheriff's department had all of their sharpshooters out, lined up across the top of the building, pointed at all of us who were demonstrating. So that would be an escalation thing, huh? They don't do that anymore, huh?
It would have been more of an escalation, especially if they'd have been down on the street mm-hmm. with riot gear on. Okay. It's having those, the helmets and those kinds of things and the shields and
the tear gas,
and so forth. And they seem to be willing to spend the time to talk through. I mean, they spent hours with the suspect.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they didn't
It wasn't until he threatened to start shooting again.
Precisely.
That they had to do something.
A long time, the negotiator did, talking to him and talking through this, and actually was able to glean a lot of information about
why he did this.
Why he did it.
What he motivations. Was upset about.
And when the guy says he's got bombs in all the surrounding buildings, you take that very seriously. You know, I mean...
Well, 25 blocks of downtown is still closed.
Right. So right. when he's saying, I'm going to set them all off, and they chose to say, we have to do some action here.
Right, because...
He's going to start shooting, he's going to blow up, you know, he says he's going to blow up these bombs, and we've lost so many officers already. I mean, they chose
well,
to
they
do
were
this
worried.
Robot.
They were worried that he was going to set something off with his cell phone.
Right.
Not something you could have done... You know, 25 years ago, but it is something that you can very easily do now. Don't know how technologically advanced and
savvy this guy is. When they go to his house, they find bombs. They find explosives.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They find bomb-making materials. So it's not an out there, you mm-hmm. know, thought that maybe he really meant that. You know?
Exactly. And at this, at the point in the negotiation, they're not absolutely certain we don't have others involved.
Right.
I mean, they're still looking to see if there is somebody else he communicated with mm-hmm. or whatever.
One of the odd things...
He appears to be very much a lone wolf.
Although his manifesto went up on his, I think, Facebook page after he was shot, that would indicate
that
somebody is collaborating in some way.
Well, and there is that footage of a guy, there's a big pillar, a round pillar, and there's a police officer on one side, and one comes around and shoots him. And I don't know if that was the guy or not at
right.
the time, but what was that? You know, what was that about?
Mm-hmm.
And was it the same rifle and the same shooting? I mean, were they related? I don't know. Mm-hmm. Was it the same person? I don't know. They haven't really addressed that. I would like for them to do that.
Well, and they are trying to find more information, and they'll still be going through that, mm-hmm. the hard drives, the social media, the house. It appears to be lone wolf, mm-hmm. but they did not know anything close to that when they were in that parking garage.
And even this morning they said, Chief Brown was on, I think, CNN, and said that there were, you know, the guy had written in his own blood
right.
the letters R and B, you know, RB on the wall in the parking garage. So what does that mean?
We don't know yet. Left a message.
Right.
Was mm-hmm. the term.
Now,
what exactly is that?
We don't know yet. So, but maybe putting all of these things together, the mm-hmm. the journal and all the information they can gather and do some analysis on it. Maybe one day they can tell us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one day soon. But I don't expect that to happen right away. You know, we won't probably know. But I do hope that we know at some point so that we can figure out ways to maybe head something like this off, because he's not alone. He mm-hmm. may be alone, but there are others out there. We saw it with Dylann Roof. You know, walking in and sitting in the church in
right.
Charleston
mm-hmm.
with all of these people and then turning around and murdering them. You know?
And in Orlando, he'd been visiting
yeah.
the club. Yeah, he paid a light.
That guy had been visiting the club. Yeah.
And he'd been over there. People said they had seen him there, sitting there in the corner, or whatever it was.
On multiple occasions.
On multiple occasions. So
maybe we can learn something from all of this and about how ways to prevent it, or at least identify it.
And, you know, I was talking to the owners of some of the bars about that, and I know this is getting off track a little bit, but it's really not. What can we do? What could we learn from that? Well, if this was a... And we don't know whether he interacted or not. If this was kind of a lone person just walking into this bar, sitting in the corner alone, was he taking notes about, okay, there's an exit here, there's an exit there, I need to block this, I need to, you know, and everything he needed to do this successfully. What do you do? Okay, so you want to be safe when you're in a bar, right?
Mm-hmm.
And right now, especially after Orlando, it would be normal for you to walk into a bar and be a little bit nervous.
Right.
In addition, if you see somebody who's walked into that bar and is nervous, it could be his first time in a gay bar. Do you remember your first time in a gay bar, Patty?
Oh, hated it. Uh-huh. Hated it.
Nervous. My first 20 times in a gay bar, I was nervous. I was just nervous, never good at it. So what do? You see somebody sitting alone, walk over and introduce yourself and talk to them. It's that simple. Engage.
Right.
It's just like police de-escalation procedures. Talk to the community.
And I think going forward, you know, we're talking about what should we do now? What, I mean, tragedy should breed change,
mm-hmm,
and reconciliation. So what should we do going forward? And there are several things. Obviously, we're going to learn from this. I am certain that DPD checked that parking garage before this thing started.
Oh, of course.
Mm-hmm. They will always do that.
Mm-hmm.
They would check those parking garages. So I am certain that they did that in advance, because they would have done a sweep through there to look for different things. But there are things we learned about this robot from this experience.
Sure. And it's never been used in this way.
It's never been used in quite this way. There are a lot of recommendations. They're in the White House Task Force on Police Brutality that came out of a very comprehensive look at the interactions between the police and the community. And not a lot of police departments... Now, certainly we have, but not a lot of police departments have implemented those suggestions. So I hope that others will take from that some of the things that we do on de-escalation, but also some of the things that came out of that report, mm-hmm, to do. And there should, you know, I've been proud of the fact that Dallas, as I said, the faith community has come together, but there are all kinds. There's a vigil tomorrow night. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got two choices. There's a vigil that the Dallas Police Association will be doing down by City Hall, because obviously the police memorial is adjacent to that. Mm-hmm. And if you've never been there, you should go there to know the men and,
yes,
women who have lost their lives over the life of the police department.
Mm-hmm. Do you have the address?
It's at City Hall.
Basically,
1500 Marilla. The other one is being done at Dallas Children's Theater that is being led by Denise Lee, who is an artist,
mm-hmm,
a vocalist, who is leading a conversation. So
A
community conversation. And she is African American.
Mm-hmm.
So if you feel the need to grieve, you have this option to go downtown.
I have another
If you
one.
Have the feeling to speak out, mm-hmm, about your anger, your grief, your whatever, there's a community conversation, mm-hmm, sort of at the end. It's up at, that's at Skillman and Northwest Five.
I have another one. Mm-hmm. There is an impromptu memorial at Dallas Police Headquarters.
Exactly.
Friday night, we attended services, Josh and I, at Bethel B'na. The flowers that we had for the services, we said we're bringing these to the police memorial.
When I drove today, down Northwest Highway, I live over in Old Lake Islands, and, you know, while right there at the Northeast Station, piles of flowers all over their, mm-hmm, their flag stands.
Yeah, their big flag stands.
And there were families there with their small children as I drove by laying those flowers out. So they're still coming.
We need to take a break. I want to talk more about Dallas's response, because okay. Dallas's response was beautiful. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Patty Fink. We're just talking about our own grieving, I think, for the five officers who were killed.
And, I think that's a lot of it.
Yeah, yeah. We'll be back with more right after this.
Hi, I'm Cleve Jones, and you're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM.
Hi, this is Beletta Lil, and I listen to Lambda Weekly. I hope...
And you're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. We had the microphone on, which is why we here in the studio only heard, hi, this is Valletta Lil, but she was listening to Lambda Weekly is what she's doing from her last visit. We're talking about the death of five police officers on Thursday, seven others injured, two civilians injured, but there was a beautiful response. First of all, we started talking about that impromptu Dallas police memorial. There are two police cars that are parked in front of police headquarters, and they are covered with flowers. Here was my experience. I went down there, and I was taking pictures and walking around the whole plaza. First of all, international news media is here like I have never seen it. I heard TV interviewers speaking Russian, French, Spanish, and not from our – and not reporters that I knew, like from our own local Telemundo and Univision, but Spanish as in from overseas. I saw a British film crew, and then I saw I heard two languages I couldn't identify, which was kind of interesting. Aside from NBC4 and Fox 29 and, you know, from all over the state, everybody has a crew here, so it was packed. But there were officers there. And I walked over to one who was a DART officer who was just standing there. I guess he was in front of the door, but facing the memorial. And I guess guarding the plaza because they wanted officers there, but also just, I said to him, how are you doing? And he just shook his head.
That's got to be rough. I mean, this is the first, the DART officer was the first DART police officer to die in the line of duty ever.
And I mean, it's been rare that a DART officer has been injured in the line of duty.
I have to say, I took DART Rail down to the memorial at Thanksgiving Square on Friday.
Were you there?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Well, why didn't you come over and say hello?
I didn't see you.
She and the other thousand.
Yeah, and there's me and the other thousands packed in there.
It was literally thousands of people.
Oh yeah, and it was when I got on the train. A passenger gave the DART police officer who was walking through our car a bouquet of flowers. It was just the most touching moment. I'm kind of choking up thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
But I got down there, and the train stopped at Pearl Arts District.
Mm-hmm.
And I just watched as people just poured out of the buildings, out of the office buildings, because it was about 10 till noon. And then I went up to...
Wait. So you were there on time?
Yes.
Oh.
Step back, man. I was there.
I am not.
And then
getting
went to St. Paul, and even more people just pouring. I mean, literally pouring. The doors were never shut. They were just more people and more people coming out. You could tell they were all coming down the elevators and walking over at the appropriate time. And we all, you know, walked together. And it was just amazing. The outpouring of just genuine stuff and through the service, they said, you know, at various times they said, hold the hand of the person next to you.
Right.
Oh,
and we did that several times.
And that one of the things that he said was, hold the hand of someone of a different race. And it wasn't hard to find somebody right around you, a different race. Everybody was mixed up and together. One of the other things they said, if you're straight, hold a gay person's hand.
It was an amazing thing.
It was really a beauty. That was my favorite part of that.
My favorite part was
ceremony.
When Mike Rawlings spoke, and he spoke really very, graciously and eloquently and yet firmly and frankly. And he said, it's possible that we could hold two sort of opposing thoughts in our mind at the same time. That these, this injustice in the black community is real. That they are experiencing what they say they're experiencing, and it is injustice, and we should all be outraged. At the same time, with the thought that we could mourn these five officers and all police who've died in the line of duty, at the same time. We could do that at the same time. We're capable. We're better than those who are not capable. Mm-hmm. And we are going to do that as a city. And we have. And that's been sort of the message we see in social media. We see it on, you know, all over, in terms of, organizations speaking out. I think it's really incredible that we have this kind of, yes, we can do this. We can put those two things together.
They chose to do it the day after. They chose to do it on Friday. And if you remember in Orlando, when the community wanted to do an event the following day, and their police department was concerned about doing it that soon.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, even I looked at it and thought, wow, those officers are going to be tired. And you're going to bring a lot of folks into downtown. Much of it's closed off. And there are a lot of things going on. But they did it because they knew the response. And that's a de-escalation, too.
Sure.
Not pushing back and saying, we need to wait a little while. It's you've got grief. You need to feel it now.
But those officers needed, yes, those officers needed it.
Right.
And the thing I noticed also was Grand Prairie Police, Plano Police, Richardson Police, Mesquite Police, every police department in the area, there were some officers there, and they were grieving.
And cities all over the country were holding their own services in that same time frame, which I thought was incredibly supportive.
Here's the part that I loved about this. There was a wall of pastors, and it was interesting who was there and who wasn't there. Pastor Jeffress, remember a couple of weeks ago, he was offering free counseling to any police officer who needed it, right? Do you think after this event some of them might be needing some counseling? He wasn't there. The second largest church up in North Dallas, was there pastor? No. He wasn't there. Here's who was there from of pastors. First of all, two from Cathedral of Hope. This is out of about 55, I counted, pastors. Two from Cathedral of Hope, one from Beth El Bana, one from North Haven United Methodist Church. You getting my drift?
Mm-hmm.
Here's the ones who spoke. Joe Clifford, who's the pastor at First Presbyterian. If you don't know him, he's not high profile. I did a story on him last year. What a fabulous guy. I love this guy. He is such a nice guy.
And Mayor Rawlings called him personally.
Yes.
Asked him to.
He called and Andy Stoker from First United Methodist
Downtown. Interesting, they chose him instead of the new bishop here, who's very controversial.
Right.
And not inclusive.
Whereas they chose the bishop for
The Catholic Church. Bishop Farrell was there and spoke beautifully. David Stern, who's the head rabbi at Temple Emmanuel, spoke beautifully and then introduced his friend and teacher, Imam Omar Suleiman. Omar was at the Orlando rally at Resource Center a couple of weeks ago, 4 weeks ago now, and spoke beautifully about, you know, about hate and how we all have to live together and get along. And I mean, he's really a wonderful person. And I think if we're looking for that leader in the Muslim community locally, he's
fabulous.
Yeah,
he's really, really
charismatic. I think he's done some work with North Haven. Haven had a recent, once again, a conversation inviting in the Iman, and they kind of had this discussion. I also want to give a shout out to all the chefs across and restaurants across the city who are
providing free.
Parigi was doing some
terrific. Zephyr in Cedar Springs.
Yeah, and you know, Pink Magnolia, Cafe Izmir after, I think, We're Feeding Officers after Thanksgiving Square. So all these different chefs and their restaurants are giving up proceeds to...
Well, or or giving free meals. If you're a police officer, come into our restaurant this weekend.
Right.
Which you know, I think is really interesting. I was starting to say this in the break when we discovered the mics were on suddenly. You know, as the LGBT community began to move toward marriage equality, I mean, still we don't have workplace equality and protections in the state or in 28 others. But we were moving toward that. When suddenly we began to see so many of our allies appear, and I think the president shows such leadership in stepping out and saying, I support marriage equality. Then the NAACP did. And then, you know, people like Valletta have been here all along for, you know, decades supporting us. But with the numbers of straight people who really stepped up and said, I support marriage equality, it was amazing. And then when the first cases began to happen, you know, with Windsor and such, and people were changing their Facebook profile pictures. And, you know, it was just like this cascade of support. we couldn't have gotten those rights without our allies, without the Valletta Lills and the President Obamas of the world, you know, because the straight community was really there for us and still are. And I think it's incumbent upon us as white people to do the same thing and step up for the Black Lives Matter movement. And I think we began to see that really come to the fore with the Orlando shooting and what happened with the LGBT community, which I thought was extraordinary. We had a sit-in in Congress to say, let's not just send our thoughts and prayers anymore. Let's do something. And I think we're starting to see that now, too, with the number of people who were not black, who are not black Americans, do not have the black experience, who were marching all over this country.
And they were there.
They were
on
there.
Thursday night.
Yes, they were there in downtown Dallas, even. You know,
and that's what
there.
I was saying. It was a very mixed group. This was not angry black people or whatever that stereotype is. This was a wide variety of the community that was there. Huge black presence, but
we need to be there, and we're I think it's incumbent upon all of us to be part of this movement to make it successful. You know, we could have done it in the LGBT community if people had said, oh, I'm with you, see you later,
right?
You know, we can't do that. And I think because we have been successful and we can make we can do something about black injustice against the black community, about inequalities, you know, that affect the black community if we stick with it and we commit ourselves. Because they cannot do it alone, just the sheer numbers. We couldn't do it in the LGBT community, and we're allegedly 10% of the population. And, you know, the black community around the country is 13 to 16% of the population. And we need to be there, you know? We need to be with them as we go forward, just like we're standing with cops, because we can have those two thoughts. We can mourn our cops and understand that there are great cops and good cops all across this country, and we mourn their deaths. We mourn their injuries. And yet there are still, we can also mourn and grieve the injustices against the black community. And we need, I think we can do that, and we're capable. I think we are absolutely capable, and we need to own it.
And we only have a few more minutes. I want to go back to Dan Patrick.
Why?
Because. No.
Why?
Because this is funny. At Thanksgiving Square, it was interesting to see not just all the pastors who were there, but all the politicians, all of the city council who was in town. State representatives were there, Democrats and Republicans cut across party lines.
And Monica Alonso spoke
beautifully, and she spoke English and Spanish.
That was a wonderful moment.
Right.
But Dan Patrick was there. Don Huffhines was there. Dan Patrick was standing right behind the main speaker. And the people who were standing around me, now I didn't know any of them, but I'm taking pictures of each of the speakers. I had my long lens on, and I was up the hill, but I got good pictures of them. And people around me were saying, nope, Dan Patrick ruined another one of your pictures. Oh, Dan Patrick ruined another. And it was interesting that the speakers, political were Monica, Clay Jenkins, Mike Rawlings, Royce West, and none of these divisive, none of the divisive pastors who don't believe in ecumenical dialogue and don't believe in interfaith work, which is, I think, the main reason that Jeffress wasn't there, because he doesn't believe in anything interfaith. But Royce West was there, spoke beautifully.
T.D. Jakes stood up and said, let's grab hands, and let's, whether you are black or white, gay or straight, right inches in front of Dan Patrick.
Yep.
I thought was just amazing.
Dan Patrick wasn't having much of it. I have pictures of his face I had to use. I literally had to go through. I took multiple pictures and had to do the one where he wasn't grimacing. Maybe I should have used those.
Well, I had texted a few people I knew were there and said, if he steps up to speak, I'm turning my back. And, you know, I think we would have.
And this is where I'm saying they made the right choice. He was not asked to speak because he was saying stupid things. He was blaming the victims. He was blaming Obama.
Hansen. Go watch the Dale Hansen piece where he says, our lieutenant governor is a fool.
And then he just
moved on.
And
he moved on.
So,
totally agree with that.
Now, yesterday, and we need to talk about this a little bit. Threats started coming in. There were two threats. Threats to the building, the police headquarters building. Somebody from said they were driving up from Houston and were going to attack the building.
And armed and going to attack. Yeah. Yeah.
And then a masked person was seen running through the parking lot, which is behind Dallas Police Headquarters, and they couldn't find him, and haven't still, have they?
Now, it sort of fizzled at the end yesterday, so I couldn't find him.
And there were shots fired at San Antonio.
Yes.
Oh, at the...
It's just scary.
So where do we go from here, Valletta?
I think, and the mayor keeps talking about this, it's the dialogue piece, which is, you said that we must stand with those folks because it's our allies that are equally as important as those who are on the front lines. So I think it is that continuing that conversation. What I fear is, are we a month away from Orlando? Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
yeah,
almost
a month today.
3.5 weeks.
Yeah.
A
month today.
So we easily become distracted, and we can't be distracted by that. So it's implementation of those things that came out of the White House's de-escalation task force. It is the ongoing conversation, and quite frankly, it's us owning up to and recognizing that there are discrepancies in the system. That's probably the first thing that needs to happen is we need to get an understanding of that.
Absolutely. And I think we need to be vocal and have that conversation and acknowledge that we may say that we are all equal, but it's not the reality in our lives for everyone. And we need to recognize that. And that as a white person, as a gay American, I know that sting of discrimination and being considered second class citizen. And what better allies can we be to the black community than to step up and say, we are here and we are with you. You know? I mean,
our hearts go out to the families of the police officers who were killed, and our love goes to the 7 officers who are recovering and the 2 civilians who are recovering. I don't know what else to even say.
If you want to contribute, there are a number. Does the Dallas Voice have that?
Yes, there's one that is on the Dallas Voice website.
I think go to the Dallas Voice.
ATO Dallas. It's a foundation to help officers. We need to go. We're completely out of time. We'll see you next week.
Thank you, Valletta.
This is William, hopefully your favorite videographer from 2X Publishing. I hope you enjoyed this video. If you like it, please leave comments below or like, follow, or subscribe to us and get notices of all our videos. We love it, even when you call.